a safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken again, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. We are live tonight, and I hope that you are going to join our conversation, because just in posting about our guest this week, if you visit us on social media, whether you're reading my updates on LinkedIn or on our Facebook page, or I tweet, of course, each week, I got a little bit of pushback, by the way, that I talked about what our topic is going to be, because I wrote about being a recovering feminist. And it definitely plays into our primary topic that we discuss each week, the pro-life cause, as well as the issue. The cause for life, I guess, is the best way that I like to say it. We're here for the cause for life. It's not a political cause. I think sometimes people associate pro-life with more of a political thing. We're here about the cause for life, helping women and men choose life, helping families to choose life and to thrive as a result of that choice. And when you start talking about feminism, wow, I don't think people can even agree what it is anymore. Had an in-depth conversation with my great niece, who is a brilliant scholar and couldn't disagree with me more about all things feminist, when she and I met up a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I don't know if that's just a function of age or if it really has to do with where things stand in the women's movement, and particularly in the way that it's taught at the college level in the women's studies departments. And so we're going to talk about that, not necessarily tonight from an academic point of view, but how it plays out in our lives. And one of the reasons why I want to do that is because our guest tonight considers herself a recovering feminist. And I guess that I probably have used those words about myself as well. I want to introduce you to Catherine Adair. And Catherine is a former Planned Parenthood employee who now runs the Respect Life Ministry at St. Francis of Assisi Parish in Massachusetts. And Catherine, welcome. It's just a pleasure to have you with us tonight here on Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you, Kim. It's my pleasure to be here.
You know, as soon as you say recovering feminist, I mean, all kinds of red flags go up. Some people think that, you know, oh, you're talking about taking away women's rights. We're going back to the dark ages. That's, I'm sure, not what you mean when you say you're a recovering feminist.
Not at all. And in fact, I was, as you were speaking previously, I was a women's studies major in college and am intimately familiar with what they're teaching. And I think that what we have is a case of feminism, not meaning feminism purports that women are always victims, that we're always oppressed, that we're always victims, that we need special protection. And I've come to realize that that is simply not true. And so while a recovering feminist, I find that what feminism teaches is that you're also in competition with men. And I found that it really had a negative effect on my relationships with the men in my life.
Mm. And our phones are open tonight, and I know you may want to weigh in on this. You may feel as though this is in a conversation that you definitely have some strong opinions on. Please do join us. Our phones are open at 800-811-3003. And the ground rules for our program, you do not have to give your name. You can choose a pseudonym. You can just say you want to be anonymous, and we do understand that, especially when we're talking about sensitive topics. But if you'd like to join us, we are here, 800-811-3003. Would love to hear your story. So, Catherine, tell me about that path into being a women's studies major.
Well, I was brought up in a very liberal household. My parents were, my mother was a founding member of the National Organization for Women chapter in my town, and, you know, I grew up stuffing envelopes for every Kennedy campaign. I was brought up in a liberal atmosphere. But for me, I think one of the defining moments that really turned me onto the path of feminism was my own experience with abortion when I was a young woman and hadn't finished college and became pregnant. And I actually was very happy and excited about it. I had this idea that, oh, I was going to have this baby and everything was going to be fine. But I was pressured into having an abortion. And that's what I did. And the abortion was really very traumatizing for me, knowing what I had done. And because of that, I really tried to just bury all my feelings about it. And I think in order to justify what I had done, the feminist ideology was very appealing to me because it gave me every answer for why what I had done was not only okay, but it was good, and that abortion was helping women. And so all of the classes that I was taking in college, the women's studies classes, and this idea about all these ideas about gender and construction and all these things were very appealing to me. It sort of gave me a home where I didn't have to deal with the trauma of my abortion.
And let's talk about that trauma, because you mentioned in passing that it really wasn't something that you wanted. One of the things that I try to do with our program is help people understand that there is a trauma at the center of every abortion. I've heard, you know, people refute that and say, well, you know, a medical abortion simply starts the menstrual flow, and a surgical abortion at 6 weeks or very early on isn't anything different than a tooth extraction. Oh my gosh, that has been said so many times. And yet it is traumatic because there's a loss of life. Tell me a little bit more about the trauma that you experienced personally, Catherine.
Well, I think that we people tend to want to intellectualize the abortion itself and to sort of remove themselves from any idea of the humanity of the child. And also, another problem that I have with feminism is this idea that the mother and child are in competition, that they're two separate entities that don't exist together, and it's simply false. So for me, as a young pregnant woman, I knew instinctually that this child was a part of my being, that we had created this life, and that you cannot separate the mother from the child. We are one. And I think I knew that instinctually, and I was really trying to think up ways in my head of how I could have this child and make my life work. And, you know, in my world, that just wasn't a possibility. And I was young, and I was vulnerable, and I was scared, and heavily influenced by people in my life. And when I was convinced that I was wrong and they were right, and even though I didn't want to have this abortion, I had to. I felt like I had no choice. And what happened, you know, I went into the abortion clinic, and when I woke up, I was devastated. And when I left the clinic, I don't think I can even express in words the devastation I felt, the emptiness of my being, physically, emotionally, spiritually. I felt so empty. There was such a void. You know, I always say I think a piece of my soul died that day. And yet I felt crazy for feeling that way, because abortion is just a medical procedure. You know, what was I upset about? You know, nobody could who was going to understand why I was so upset? Because, you know, the clinic tells you that you're going to feel relief. And when you feel traumatized, you feel crazy because nobody else feels that way, or at least you're told that.
Catherine Adair is our guest, and this is Cradle My Heart Radio, and it's time for a short break, which will give you time to get to the phone if you'd like to join us for our conversation tonight. We are live, 800-811-3003. It's 800-811-3003. Join us. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
With Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. To Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003.
Catherine Adair is our guest tonight, and if you're just joining us, Catherine shared from the heart in the first segment of the program about the experience of bonding with her child before birth and then having others decide for her that abortion was going to be what was going to happen, and the severing of that bond, the death and loss of the child, and the trauma that followed set the stage for a lifestyle of feminism. Now, Catherine, you said that, you know, this was sort of the prevailing worldview in your home, and this was pretty much, you know, what you had been trained to think. But the abortion, as I understand it in your story, also played a pretty deep impact, or a pretty deep role, I should say, in forming that worldview in terms of how you lived it out going forward from the abortion experience.
It did, because I desperately needed to not feel crazy, because it is not a natural thing for a mother to kill her child. And when you're living in a world that's telling you that it's normal, it's okay, and it's even a good thing, then I had to keep myself from going crazy, because I felt like I didn't have any footing, like I just couldn't put, I was just lost, and I had nobody to talk to. We were not a religious family, and I didn't know anybody that I felt I could share this with, and so I really just went head first really heavily into feminism as a way to feel that there was a place for me in this world, that I could justify what I had done. And that, in fact, it abortion is a positive, good thing for women. And that's where I found myself. And, in fact, it worked really well, because I didn't even think about my abortion for years. I buried it so deeply that I didn't even think about it. And then, of course, after when I graduated from college, I ended up going to work for Planned Parenthood.
And so, Catherine, here we are, and I want you to help connect the dots for those of us women who didn't necessarily have that feminist underpinning, or maybe it wasn't as overt. You know, in my home, I think that my mother trained us to be independent. And, you know, I graduated from high school in the 70s, and, you know, opportunities were just opening up for women in the workplace. And my mother was, you know, trying to be sure that I would not have to be dependent upon a man. That was her phrase that she used, you know, and I don't know what sort of wounding drove that counsel, because we were in an intact family, but that was her. Wow, that was just, you had to guard against having to depend upon a man in life. You had to, you know, gain that independence through your education and your thinking, et cetera, et cetera. And when the abortion decision presented itself in my case, I really passively allowed others to make the decision for me and felt abandoned to that decision. I didn't allow myself to feel a maternal bond with the child, but I absolutely felt the same thing you've described so beautifully there, in terms of feelings, you know, in addition to the shame of having had a hand in the destruction of the child, there was this shame about feeling like I was now crazy. Like, I couldn't resolve it in my mind, and everyone kept saying, you did the best you could, or there's nothing wrong with it, so there must be something wrong with me. And I believed, I guess, that, okay, well, I must be pro-choice. I must defend this choice. I know that it's wrong, but I don't want to tell others what to do. All of the rationalizations and excuses that we hear folks make until they've clearly made a stand based on some sort of truth or objective standard, you know. And for you to help us understand that, I think is one of the most important things that people can take away from our conversation tonight, that this idea that I don't know how many women in the pro-choice movement are post-abortive and are there nurturing pain instead of being able to nurture family members who are missing.
Oh, I think it is far greater number than we know of post-abortive women and men, for that matter, who consider themselves pro-choice. I think especially, you know, men are very damaged by this feminist idea that they have no say, that because it's not their body, they need to, you know, shut up and have no say. And so they are victimized by this abortion mentality also. And I do think that one of the things that the pro-choice movement tries to do is to, they want abortion to be normal. They want it to people to think it's just like going to get a manicure or getting a tooth pulled, because for if people really know about the trauma involved, they might think twice about it.
Yes, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I'm fine.
I was just going to reset and let folks know that this is Catherine Adair, our guest tonight. She is a pro-life speaker, and she's involved now in ministry in the Respect Life office in her archdiocese in Massachusetts. She's a former Planned Parenthood worker. And, you know, Catherine, I want to give you the opportunity to tell that part of the story, too, how you go from the woundedness of, you know, feeling insane and needing to reconcile this into counseling other women to have abortions.
Well, I think the human psyche is a fascinating thing where I truly had buried my own abortion experience very deeply. I had decided I was going to be this radical feminist. You know, I, as I said before, I'm a women's studies major. I'm marching on Washington for pro-choice, all of these things. And so I had decided when I was graduating that I wanted to go into social work, and I saw that Planned Parenthood was hiring. Now, Planned Parenthood, to me, I just had this idea in my head that it was just a pro-woman feminist organization, and I wasn't too clear on what they actually did. I knew that they did abortions, but I wasn't too clear, but I knew the name, and I knew that they were, at least in my circle, you know, very pro-woman. So I jumped at the chance. I thought, well, this is a great way for me to show my loyalty to the cause, the feminist cause. And I was very excited about the opportunity to work for them. I knew they did abortions, but it really wasn't... I think what I had done in my mind was effectively neutralized sort of the idea of abortion, that it was just something that, you know, you got done. I never thought about the babies involved. I never thought about it as being human beings involved. It was just something you got done. So I really didn't have any moral qualms about going to work for them. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I was really excited about the chance.
Well, and I think it's interesting because moral is such an, you know, it's such a key word in this in terms of how our hearts are convicting us when God does break through. And yet, when I tell people I didn't have any moral footing for the decision before I went in, it was just expedient. It was problem solving. And, you know, in order for it to be moral, someone has to propose to you that there is another life involved. And instead, what's proposed to you is it's not a baby, it's tissue.
That's right.
And so I think that's where, you know, those feelings of insanity, if you will, or, you know, just the need to reconcile it, because our hearts know better.
Yes. And to me, I think it was just a matter of survival. It was a matter of survival to become a part of this movement and to feel like I was somebody and that I was, that I, you know, wasn't going to spiral down into, I simply couldn't go to that space of truth. I couldn't. I think that I really felt I wouldn't survive it. And so this was my way of coping. And of course, Planned Parenthood is very happy to accommodate that by marketing themselves as a positive pro-woman organization. And so I, like many other young women who go to work for them, it was more about, you know, you have sort of these, you know, stars in your eyes, like you're, you know, like I said, you're working for the cause and you're doing something positive and you're a progressive, you're an intellectual. You know, this is a, you know, working for Planned Parenthood isn't just a job. It's being part of a movement.
Sure, it's a cause.
Yes, yes. And they're very happy to hire, you know, college-age women like myself who have the stars in their eyes and are, you know, to hire them and sort of use that to their advantage. You know, you don't, when I took the job, I certainly didn't have any idea what I was going to end up doing.
And so how did things change for you, Catherine? How did you break through?
Well, you know, of course it took place over, some time. There were some things that happened. You know, what they do first, of course, is I started simply as a receptionist. And then, you know, after a few months, I was trained as a counselor. And after that, a few months after that, I was also trained as a medical assistant, where you're actually in the abortion room with the doctor and the nurse. So pretty soon, I was pretty much doing everything. I was also in the recovery room, et cetera. And what I saw as I was working there was that it wasn't very pro-woman at all. It was a lot of things went on that were racist and really disturbing to me. And also I saw the really callous way women were treated by the doctors, by the abortion doctors. Where I worked, we did abortions all day, every day. It was Monday through Saturday. We didn't do anything else. So it wasn't as though you had one day that you were doing abortions. That's all I did. And there was a lot of callousness involved in that. We were told to work very quickly because the doctors didn't like to wait for the patients. So it was really like a meat market, you know, these women just coming through. And of course I was also handling the remains of the babies, seeing what was happening to them during the abortion, handling the aborted babies afterwards. And we also did, they did second trimester abortions there. And really a turning point for me was the day when I was asked to clean up the room after second trimester abortion. And I saw the arms and legs of the baby in a jar, dismembered. And, you know, it was a moment in my life when I just stood there and stared and couldn't believe I was seeing what I was seeing. And even though I'd been dealing with these aborted babies for so long, there was something about that particular baby that hit something in my brain. Something happened, and I felt like God was showing me the horror of what I was involved in. Whereas before I was, you know, we would make jokes about it. We would laugh about it. It wasn't really human to me. There was something about this particular moment that God chose to show me the horror of what I was doing. And things really changed for me after that.
Mm. Catherine, thank you for sharing that. I know it's difficult. I know that you have had a degree of healing and I just know that it's difficult, and I appreciate it. It's time for another short break. I want to give you the opportunity to express your thoughts to Catherine for sharing her story. You know, I don't often talk about the details of my abortion experience, but I'm willing to, as God gives the opportunity. But each time that we do, it leaves us very vulnerable. And so I know that if you feel the support and the love that Catherine deserves for opening her heart, I sure hope you'll call and join us and share that with her on the air tonight. 800-811-3003 is our number. This is Cradle My Heart Radio, and we'll be back after this short break. Please join us.
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Cradle My Heart with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
When I was writing about our guest this week, Catherine Adair, who went from being a pro-choice abortion counselor at Planned Parenthood to now being a woman's advocate at the Respect Life office in St. Francis of Assisi Parish in Massachusetts, I noted that, in my view, abortion on demand, elective abortion, degrades female dignity. And I got some pushback on that. And I want to talk with you about that, Catherine, because you have, as I said, if you're just joining us earlier in the interview, Catherine describes herself as a recovering feminist. And this idea that abortion degrades female dignity, I'm not talking about, you know, a woman who is childless by choice and never gets pregnant. I'm not talking about a situation where a pregnancy truly threatens the life of a mother and a termination is absolutely necessary. I'm talking about placing your life above the life of a child for reasons not related to a life or death situation. And I'd love to hear your thoughts about this, Catherine, because I think this is at the root of what causes that mental anguish after abortion, that we're told that this is going to advance us, and yet somehow we know that we've been diminished as women by this.
One of the things that feminism espouses is that women have to be like men in order to get ahead. I'm not talking about, looking like them physically or talking like them, but I'm talking about that feminism says we must be a wombless human being. We must not be ruled by our fertility. In fact, we have to control or eliminate our fertility in order to be equal to men. And what I think we have found is that this idea that has sort of permeated into women's minds that has put us into competition with our children, first of all, but that we are threatened by our fertility. And rather than perhaps manage it in a natural way or look at ourselves as the natural woman that God has created us to be. I mean, we were created to bring forth life. This is just a truth that feminism has tried to deny and that women push back against. I'm not saying that every woman has to have 10 children. I'm not saying that at all, but to say that, well, you know, you're pregnant and it's inconvenient, we can just get rid of it. It takes away the dignity of the woman because the child is a part of who she is. And to just kill a child, it would diminish the dignity of a man or a woman just to kill, to murder, is not an acceptable part of the human experience. And so for a woman to murder the child in her own womb is even less so an acceptable part of the human experience, because that child is a part of who she is. We are meant to bring forth life. And whether you were excited about this pregnancy, not excited about this pregnancy, you know, not expecting this pregnancy, it doesn't, how we feel about it doesn't change the fact that we're talking about a human being.
Sure, exactly. And I think, and that's one of the most frustrating things, once the truth has dawned in our hearts and we can see through the rhetoric, it's very frustrating that, the truth remains veiled, I think. And when I'm writing about female dignity, I'm not trying, the person who, commented on this on LinkedIn, and I'm just referring to this because, the phone calls are a little slow. And believe me, sometimes I know folks don't want to break away from listening to dial the phone. So I appreciate that too. But, one of the comments was that, you know, well, you haven't walked in a woman's shoes, and so don't make a blanket statement. But in this one, I'm on very solid ground that abortion does degrade female dignity, especially the way that it's put forward in our culture. And I don't think that's a shaming statement to women.
It's
not
a shaming statement, because
that's actually liberating.
There is nothing empowering about abortion.
Yes.
You know, and one need only spend a day in an abortion clinic to know that for fact. If this was an empowering decision, you would not see the emptiness in the women's eyes after abortion. You wouldn't see the grief. You wouldn't see the horror. You wouldn't see the fear after the abortion. And it is not something that women are allowed to talk about, because one, well, you chose the abortion, you have to deal with it, and, you know, mentality that's out there. And it's hidden. You know, it's hidden. It's, you know, once I left that clinic, I didn't have to talk to anyone about my abortion. I didn't have to tell anybody about it, you know, and so the myths that are perpetuated by the pro-choice people become part of the sort of this cultural myth. And it's certainly, we know that, you know, the media is very biased, you know, they're very pro-abortion. And so these cultural ideas that are out there become ingrained in people's heads. And so, you know, even women who have never had an abortion or don't even really think about it can oftentimes say, well, abortion is, it's okay for women to have an abortion, there's nothing wrong with it, because we're so afraid of, you know, shaming. But we don't talk about dignity, what dignifies a person. You know, if you spend, like I said, an afternoon in an abortion clinic and watch the way these women are treated, look into their eyes after the abortion, and it's clear as day that it robs them of their dignity.
Catherine Adair is our guest. Our phones are open, 800-811-3003. And this is a friendly conversation. If you disagree, I will absolutely respectfully consider your opinion, but I would love to hear it at 800-811-3003. And by the way, if we, you know, while we're talking about this backdrop of the feminist worldview, I came across a great little read on Kindle this week called Freedom Feminism, and it's written by an author I really admire. Her name is Christina Hoff Summers, and as a women's studies major, I'm sure you're familiar with her writing, Catherine. Maybe there are some feminist thinkers out there that you feel are compatible with those who value life and don't have abortion as an agenda item. I think that's one of the reasons that one of the statistics that Hoff Summers cites in this book, and I've seen it elsewhere, is that fewer than 17% of women are willing to call themselves feminists today because of the radical agenda that the feminist movement has taken on.
And I do think there's, you know, when you're within that feminist world, dissent is not tolerated. And you must toe the party line. And I think I found when I was working at Planned Parenthood that even when I had questions or problems or was disturbed by something, I really, even if I tried to talk to somebody about it, I was put down right away. It was almost like they were trying to stamp out a fire, because you are not allowed to dissent. And there are organizations and groups out there, such as Feminists for Life, who, and I think also Feminists for Nonviolent Choices is another group. But, you know, Feminists for Life, it is a feminist viewpoint. And I think they keenly understand why abortion is so profoundly anti-woman. Because, again, feminism is trying to deny the connection between, you know, sexual activity and pregnancy. They're trying to deny the humanity of the unborn child, and they're also trying to I believe that motherhood is not a dignified state of life for women. And so I think there are feminists out there who feel quite differently and are very pro-life and pro-woman.
Sure, and I agree with those resources that you've mentioned. Another book that you might want to read for our listeners is Carolyn McCulley's volume that's been out for six, 8 years now, A Radical Womanhood, Feminine Faith in a Feminist World. She does a fine job of outlining the ideology behind many in the feminist movement today, that it's not merely equality. And there are all sorts of terms, you know, that refine our idea about feminism. There's equity feminism, there's gender feminism. But I really like what Hoff Summers is doing with this volume, Freedom Feminism, because she reclaims the maternal feminism that was a companionate movement to the suffrage movement in first wave feminism.
Yes.
You know, and so if you're not interested in the scholarly pursuit of the history, just know that there have been women who stood for equality, but who understood that there are many women who don't want to have the dignity of motherhood, the dignity of the role of women in the home, degraded in order to advance the cause of women in the workplace.
Mm.
Catherine Adair is our guest, and it's time for another short break. Stay with us. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. You can learn more about Catherine's ministry at cradlemyheart.org. There are links to her organizations as well as program information, and you'll find out how to find us on social media, all at cradlemyheart.org. More coming up with Catherine Adair after this.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks for being with us tonight. Our guest is Catherine Adair. And Catherine, I want to give you the opportunity to talk about life now that you are healed, life now that you have had the epiphany, left the work that you were doing at Planned Parenthood, moved away from a pro-choice worldview. Tell me about life now and how what the ministry that God has given you and how your healing has played out.
Well, God, of course, has been extremely good to me and blessed me enormously. I did, after leaving the clinic, I did get married, and my husband is actually the father of the child that I had aborted. And we have 5 children, which is which is amazing to me, because when I worked at the clinic, I didn't even want children. But he really sort of just started tapping me on the shoulder very gently. And I really didn't know how to respond to it because I felt such shame over what I had done. And, but when our first 2 children were younger, we decided to start going to church. And it was through there that I, really had some encounters with the Lord and asked his forgiveness. And, he led me to start a ministry, Respect Life Ministry, which is really the first place where I told anybody about my story. And I was so afraid I was terrified because, of course, you know, I didn't know any pro-life people when I worked for Planned Parenthood. I hated pro-life people. I thought they were all trying to kill me. I was terrified of them. And so I thought, and I had this idea they were all really judgmental, hateful people. And when I started telling my story, I was just greeted with so much love and kindness that I had never experienced before in my life. And it really changed. It was really the folks that I met, the people that I met who showed me what God's love really is, that really has helped me so much, has sustained me. And so the ministry was really about, you know, spreading the pro-life message and doing different things in the community. And then, of course, he also led me to become a public speaker. So I do travel to different places in the country to share my story and to talk to people. But really, I feel like the greatest gift that God has given me is in my family, in my vocation as a wife and mother, because, one, it's something that I just, you know, when you have this feminist mentality, it's just like that's the worst thing you could do with your life, to be a wife and mother. And yet he has blessed us, given me a wonderful husband and these children. And one of the children is actually a child that we adopted. And she's now almost 3 years old. She was our foster daughter. She came to us when she was 7 weeks old. But the way I met her mother was that her mother was going to have an abortion. And her mother has a mutual friend, and I have a mutual friend who put us in touch. So I actually emailed with the mother saying, you know, I can help you with whatever you need. You know, having an abortion is not going to solve the problems in your life. And she ended up choosing life. And when she was having difficulties in her life, she asked us to take in the child, the baby. And we eventually ended up adopting her. So I really feel like God has given us such a gift in her, because we were able to, every time I look at her, I just think she's just a miracle, because she came. I mean, the mother actually had an appointment for the abortion. So God continuously shows me that he loves me. And that's a great part of the healing, of course, after abortion, is to really accept that God loves you. Because it's, you know, for a mother to, when you realize what you've done, I mean, how could anybody love somebody who's done such a hideous, horrible thing as what, you know, a mother does when she aborts her child? And, of course, for me working in the clinic, taking part in thousands of abortions, it was when I was really able to accept his love that I was lovable. He shows me every day in little ways how much he loves me.
Catherine Adair, our guest. And Catherine, I really want to underline what you've said. For someone who's listening tonight who feels trapped, who feels that dissonance that we've been discussing about, you know, everyone says it was okay, but I know it wasn't okay. What made it safe for Catherine to begin to seek her healing was kindness and caring, first from her husband, then from people at her church, yeah, then from people who understood the experience and could help her process it from the standpoint of valuing the life, even though the life was lost. You can value the life even though the life has been lost. And I hope that that makes you bold to begin that process somewhere, somehow, in the coming days, to really take a risk, first to show your heart to God, to pour it out to him, because he already knows all the details, and then to take a risk to reach out to someone. Maybe even if you don't have a church, there has to be someone who has invited you to church or who you know is a churchgoer that you trust, and let that be a place to start a whole new chapter of your life, because God made me a mother as well, Catherine, and it's an amazing thing what he can do when
praise
we allow
God,
his,
absolutely.
When yeah. we allow his love to change our hearts.
Yes, and you know, it's amazing to me how I'm really overwhelmed sometimes by, you know, as I do talks and so forth, I'm always really overwhelmed by the folks that have been involved in the pro-life movement for so many years, who are so faithful to God's call, and they're so loving. And so, you know, like you were just saying, anybody who might be struggling with the pain of their abortion and the fear, I think the fear and the shame hold us back so much mm-hmm. from reaching out to other people. But know this, that I, who was indoctrinated that all Christian people, that all pro-life people are hateful, violent, judgmental, horrible people, when I just took that leap of faith to share my story, I was only greeted with love and compassion. I have never had any person say to me, "You are a horrible person. How dare you? How dare you come out here and you know, try to act like you're, you know, holier than thou, Miss God, you know?" Like, I've never had anybody say to me, "You're terrible, murderer." None of those things that I was afraid of have ever happened.
Well, anyone who would doesn't understand the love of Christ or his mission and all that he's already accomplished for us, Catherine.
And that's right. And it's our fear. It's our fear. It's in our humanity, you know, in our because we feel such shame because, as we've discussed, we know that it was wrong. But for whatever reason, it was what we did. For every woman has her different reasons. And, you know, I do feel terrible because I, working in a clinic, did. I didn't realize it then, and it took me a long time to realize it, but I was selling abortions. And so even a woman who might express doubt, I would, you know, reassure her that her decision for abortion was the right decision. And so I do understand that once you get into that clinic, you're probably not going to leave and without having an abortion. So for whatever reason they were there or they chose that there is healing and God does love them.
Catherine, we have just about a minute remaining. I'd like to give you the opportunity to lead us in a prayer to close the program.
Oh, thank you so much. In the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for Kim, for her healing, for her willingness to share and to bring this, for her ministry, that it would reach every person that it needs to reach. And Father, I would just ask you that any person that is suffering this evening or in pain would reach out to somebody close to them or to talk to you, Father, and to pour out their hearts to you, because we know, Father, how much you love us, how much we are your children. And I ask you, Father, to bless all of Kim's listeners, and I thank you so much, Father, for my healing and the love that you have for me. And I ask all of this in the most holy name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Catherine Adair, thank you so much for joining us.
God bless you, Kim. Thank you so much.
You can learn more about Catherine's ministry at our website at cradlemyheart.org, and also check there for upcoming program notes. Next week, Vicki Thorne, the founder of Project Rachel, one of the ministries that Catherine mentioned, will be joining us to give us some very surprising information about why it is so difficult to forget after abortion, and some healing and release. Visit us on Facebook, join us on social media, be here next week, and remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we.